Hello, everyone, and welcome back to James Cameron's Titanic Scene by Scene. I'm Brittany Butler.
I'm Ethan Brim.
And today we are here to talk about Scene 30, Your Money Can't Save You, which is one of the DVD scene selection titles, and thought that was a pretty good one for this scene.
One of the best lines, too, in the movie, I think.
Absolutely. And funnily enough, I just thought it was interesting. We're sitting down to record scene 30 just after I have freshly turned 30.
Oh, yeah, you're 30 now. Welcome to the Arbitrary Club.
Yes. Tomorrow will be exactly a month since I turned 30, and we have not recorded since I've turned 30. So that's just kind of funny how it lined up like that. Nice. Scene 30
that is weird.
At 30. Can't believe we're 30 scenes in. And that's another crazy thing that I wanted to mention is that when I sat down to take my notes for this episode and I opened the screenplay where I have it bookmarked for where we left off in the screenplay, I hadn't really been paying attention until I went to open it and I saw how thin the amount of pages left is. I counted and we only have 22 pages of screenplay left.
Weird. Wow.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, me too. How many minutes do we have left, though?
Probably 40? Probably under 40, maybe something like that.
Wait, wait, it's 3 hours and what? What's the total?
15
not
minutes,
including
but
credits.
But yeah, that's 7 minutes of end credits. So yeah, we go through this all the time.
I know. I don't remember.
Like every time we're saying this.
What's the movie again?
Oh boy, yeah. But we are getting close, so that was just very scary when I opened the book and I saw how little pages were left. I said, oh no, how is this even possible? How have we actually made it this far? I'm shocked. I can't believe it. Oh, I'm very proud, though. Very happy.
Me too. When we're done, it's going to feel accomplished.
Oh, for sure.
We're going to feel accomplished.
And I feel like, especially since we've come back, I'm very proud of the episode since we've come back. I think
same.
We've been doing all right.
Had some good guests.
Yep. Some more to come.
Really heavy scenes.
Yes. Good discussion.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was trying to figure it out. I think by the time we're done recording today, because we're going to try to record two scenes today, so we'll have like 8 to 13 scenes left or something.
Yeah. Like some of the most famous scene, like iconic scenes are still not even close.
Yeah. And those will be very fun to talk about. But so before we get into anything, sort of reset a little bit seriously here, since the last time we recorded, a lot has happened, especially related to the Titanic community and Titanic. Of course, we're talking about the Oceangate Titan tragedy, which I had mentioned at the beginning of our last episode, like a little disclaimer that we might talk about it at the beginning of this episode, because we did receive a lot of messages from you guys asking our thoughts on it and when, you know, everything was going on. And I mean, at this point now, it's been almost exactly a month since the news came out about like the official statement that it imploded.
It's wild that it made it, like, I mean, obviously so. It is something that would make national or international news, but
yeah.
It seems so frivolous to go down and like just to look at the Titanic wreckage. It's just like the juxtaposition of the reason why they went and then what happened is like, I think it's affecting people because of that too. And
mm-hmm.
You know, these people were like excited and they were, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity.
And I know James Cameron chimed in, he weighed in and gave some of his thoughts, very to the point, a lot of the things he had to say, but you know, he's not wrong, and he knew the people, because I guess the underwater exploration community is very small, so he knew them, and he said he knew like right away, as soon as he had found out that they went missing, he knew what happened. Just as someone who's done this sort of stuff all the time, he's like, oh no, it imploded. I feel like it sort of reopened old wounds a little bit in relation to the Titanic disaster to have another disaster take place right at the same spot.
Were they right next to it or what?
I think I read that they were maybe a mile away from the wreck.
Yeah, wow, yeah, that's pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just crazy how this is now also forever tied into Titanic history, honestly. Like, the Titanic subreddit has just been full of OceanGate stuff now, too. Yeah. And it's just always going to be a modern story that is tied into it. It just is so crazy the way everything connected to Titanic has this eerie quality to it. Like, even something today to happen is... It fascinated everybody. We were all watching the news.
Yeah, because in the same way, like what you're saying, it like perpetuates the legend of the Titanic just even further and connects it to present day.
Mm-hmm. There was a really crazy vlog that I watched on YouTube of this guy who went into the very same sub that imploded 3 or 4 weeks before it happened. And he went with the people. He didn't end up going down to Titanic, but he went on like a little test run with them to like a couple feet down. And he got to meet them and everything. And he vlogged his whole experience and then shared it afterwards. Wow. And I was like, that is crazy. I recommend checking that out. It was pretty wild. Yeah, I mean, I wanted us to at least say something about it, but at the same time, I also feel like I don't really feel like there's much more that we can say that hasn't already been said by now. Just that, of course, it was a crazy, unfortunate tragedy that happened, you know, in relation to Titanic. Like James Cameron said that, you know, he can't help but see the similarities. You know, he was kind of going off with like the hubris kind of thing.
I'm struck by the similarity of the Titanic disaster itself, where the captain was repeatedly warned about ice ahead of his ship, and yet he steamed at full speed into an ice field on a moonless night, and many people died as a result. And for a very similar tragedy where warnings went unheeded to take place at the same exact site, you know? Now there's one wreck lying next to the other wreck for the same damn reason. With all the diving that's going on all around the world, I think it's just astonishing. It's really quite surreal. And of course, P.H. Nargileh, the French legendary submersible dive pilot, a friend of mine, you know, it's a very small community. I've known P.H. for 25 years. For him to have died tragically in this way is almost impossible for me to process.
Something else, though, that was I found very disturbing is seeing how a tragedy, or like just a Titanic-related tragedy of some kind, how it would play out in the social media generation. Because a lot of people, like, there's all these memes about, oh, if Titanic sank today, everybody would have their smartphones out and they'd be filming the sinking, you know? And just seeing the way people were reacting to all of this on social media was kind of disturbing. Everyone's first thought was to make fun of it, to make memes, you know, be completely irreverent about everything. They were just like, oh, this is going on. Let me try to do something funny to make content based on it. And it was just, that was insane to witness, I think.
And also it's important to note too that, like, I think what kind of got muddled was the fact that they were, you know, wealthy people, like really wealthy people. It kind of makes people feel less sadness about it, I think, and which is, I don't, it's just not right. Like, you should, you're still human.
Lives were lost. Yeah,
there was a kid on there. Yeah, these people were still, they were still humans. And I think that the emphasis on their wealth maybe in some weird way, like, sanitizes it for some people, which is totally wrong.
You're totally true. Someone wrote it in the Titanic subreddit. I think it was, you had to have Jack be a poor guy that you could root for, because if everybody was rich, no one would have cared as much. Something along those lines. And then
it's true.
And then someone said, case in point, OceanGate tragedy. And I said, oh my God. Yeah. That is terrible.
Because if they were like a celebrity, you see the opposite side. People are crying and you know, it's sad. It is sad. But it's like you don't know these people. It's just like these blank faced rich people. And it's just like all of a sudden we have a different reaction. But if they're a celebrity or somebody who, you know, we welcome into our home through movies or music or sports, it's all of a sudden different or something. Yeah, it's just like the two sides of that. So wrong that like it is that people don't understand. It just boggles my mind.
But anyway, I feel like there's probably more to talk about there, but we are on a bit of a time constraint today. But yes, of course, rest in peace to the victims of the Ocean Gate Titan tragedy. It's just absolutely crazy. Let's see. Yeah, so before we get into the scene, I do have two quick emails I'd like to read because we've had guests on our last few episodes, and because we had guests, I did not read any emails for those episodes because we have our guest to really focus on at the top of the episode and having them introduce themselves and share their Titanic story, and so there wasn't really time for emails, so I want to read two to try to make up for that. So this one is from Catherine. So the subject is 13-year-old me in 1998 never thought I'd be typing this. And they go on to say, hey, Brittany and Ethan, it's totally okay if you don't share this email on the podcast. I just need to express my newly discovered thoughts of this movie somewhere. I did see it in theaters in 1997 a couple of times when I was 13 years old, but I didn't love it at that time. Recently, my boyfriend was watching a video about Titanic, the ship, not the movie, and that sparked my interest in it again. It had been 20 plus years since I'd seen the film, or since I saw the film, and I decided to watch it again. It impacted me in such a different way as an adult woman than it did as a teenager. It went from being a movie I just kind of liked and is now one of my favorite films. For context, I saw Avatar 2 in theaters last year, and there was a trailer for the upcoming limited re-release of Titanic. I heard a man in front of me saying, I'm definitely going to go see that. And I remember thinking to myself, good for you, buddy, to each their own. Now, after watching it again on the small screen, I wish I could have gone to see it when it was re-released. Now that I've got a few more years of life experience after watching it again, it really feels like it is all about Rose as opposed to Jack and Rose. Jack was a good character who helped Rose realize who she really was and what she really values, and it made me wonder if more women had men like Jack in their lives to prop them up and show them their true potential, how much better the planet would be. As much as Jack made her realize who she really was, Titanic showed her that as well. The sinking made it possible for her to see how different she was from Cal and her mom. Rose values the lives of others no matter what their status, and clearly Cal and Ruth do not. I feel like the Picasso scene could also be a small way of showing us this from the beginning. I know the context of the scene is to mainly make the audience sympathize with Rose and dislike Cal, but it also shows that Cal and her do not see the world the same way. Sorry for rambling, but so thankful I stumbled upon your podcast after my delayed obsession with a 25-year-old movie I thought I understood, but obviously didn't. Catherine.
Good email.
Yeah. I am the number one advocate for seeing Titanic in theaters if you can. If there is the opportunity, do not pass it up.
Yeah, my wife and I went to, when we went to go see the 2012 re-release, I'd seen the movie once before, like in bits and pieces and stuff. And she'd seen it when she was a kid. And she was always like, oh, yeah, Titanic's like, it's Titanic, whatever, it's good. And, you know, it's nothing special, whatever. And then after we saw it, we were both like, whoa, like, that was incredible. And she brought it up the other day when we were talking about it, actually, how that's how she felt when she, upon the re-release, and how it was weird that she never, you know, when you're a kid, too, like, you don't always look for everything in a movie. You latched on to Titanic, but some kids don't. Some, you know, even if they're 13, like
Catherine,
yeah, you know, even if you're 13, you're not necessarily going to see it in the same light, and sometimes you need life experience, sometimes you don't, but yeah, it's cool. But yeah, seeing it in theaters is definitely, I recommend that for sure.
But thank you for that email, Catherine. We're glad that you found the podcast, and it's seemingly helping you see the movie in new ways as well. That's always awesome to hear. So we have another one from Mia, and the subject is Titanic Youngster. She says, "Hello, my name is Mia, and I'm currently a freshman in high school. I want to start this out by saying thank you. The amount of gratitude I have for you for making this podcast is beyond words. I started listening to this podcast as soon as I found it, and I even emailed you a while back saying that my favorite scene was the one in which Rose jumps off the lifeboat back onto the sinking ship to be with Jack. That is a statement that still holds true. I always thought that this scene held a little setup and payoff, as earlier Ruth says to Rose, our choices are never easy, which would be a setup, and the payoff being Rose making the choice to jump back onto the ship. In a way, Ruth's own advice from a scene where she seemed to be trying to strengthen the bond with her daughter is ultimately what ended up ending that bond altogether. Also, as the hopeless romantic I am, I also love that scene because of how concerned Jack looks for Rose." Same. "Wishing you all the best and keep doing what you are doing. It is making a bigger impact than you realize. Lots of love, Mia."
Aww. Great point. That was a really good point, actually, that it was the mom who said that, and you can see that as, you know, informing this advice. Because obviously, like, Jack makes a big impact in a positive way, and, you know, mutual. But, you know, it's realistic that even if you don't have a close relationship with your parents, they can still give you some advice that you can use. And it's just funny that it was used to separate, like, divorce herself from her mom in a way. Yeah, great point. Yeah. I liked it.
There's so many things.
Yeah. What year did she said that?
Oh, you know? This is new.
Okay. It's not like that one where it was like she was 16 and it was like 3 years ago and now she's like an adult.
I do think the first email she sent was from a while ago. I don't know if we had read it or not. Since her email is about that scene, it was also brought to my attention, and I just wanted to mention this because we did not say it in our episode with LA when we talked about this scene, which was not without you. We started having a little meltdown about how when Rose jumped back on the ship, that was an empty spot for someone that she had wasted. But it was brought to my attention that a man jumps onto the lifeboat when Rose jumps on the ship.
Oh, whoa. I didn't even notice that.
I never noticed that before.
Good eye.
I know. And I rewound and I looked back, and it's as soon as she lands on the side of the ship, a guy just hops right on. And I said, wow. So there you go. Rose being the villain, I don't think that got on.
Speaking of destroying lifeboat spots, this entire scene is just them punting lifeboats. And
oh my gosh. Well, they were a special kind. So, I mean, yeah, so I guess we can jump right into the scene then. So yes, firstly though, it starts with a shot of passengers running below the bridge area, which I think is around, I think they call it A deck. They're like running through all this water that's flooding. And this one guy that's like in the center of the frame, I always thought he looked like Cal.
Whoa, no, I thought that.
No, you didn't.
No, I swear. But I was like, was that Cal? But I thought it was at first, and then I realized it didn't make any sense.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Because I was trying to get like back into, because I'm watching it from the start, so I'm like trying to get back into it. And so you're like, wait, I was like, wait, what? Where was Cal last? And I was like, oh yeah, he was. I had to think about it though for a second. Yeah,
because there's something about this guy, this background actor, like the way he's running, like he just kind of looks and moves like Cal.
Yeah,
I don't know, but that's too funny.
Maybe it was like Billy Zane's stunt double, and they like needed somebody.
Maybe. I wonder if anybody else thinks that, or if this is just a weird thing that we thought now.
Oh yes, please.
Yes. So then we see the crewmen and everyone helping take down one of the collapsible lifeboats. That's what they were called.
Oh, okay.
And they were on the roof of the officers' quarters, and they were difficult to get down from there. According to James Cameron, they were 2.5 tons.
So like 5,000 pounds?
I don't know. See, that's crazy.
Well, 2.5 tons is 5,000 pounds.
That's crazy. I don't know.
That's a lot.
Anyway, but this was apparently one of the ways they tried to get them down, by sliding them down oars. But obviously the oars broke. But that's all historically accurate there, or at least a nod to what happened historically. So then we get a brief shot of Tommy and Fabrizio running to get to safety somewhere. We get a shot of Murdoch running over to this stairwell that looks down into the lower decks, and he sees that, you know, it's rushing full of water. It's a reminder to both the audience and the character of how fast the sinking is moving.
Mm-hmm.
And this motivates him to get the crew to work faster, and he gives them more orders, and he's really trying to hasten things up here. We see Cal trying to find his way to a lifeboat, to safety. So he climbs up onto some, you know, this piece of machinery to try to get a better look at what's going on beyond this crowd that has congregated. And I think Cameron had also mentioned that in this scene that you have all of the classes together on the deck scrambling to get mm-hmm. to a lifeboat. And he considered this to be a faithful reproduction or faithful recreation of what probably would have been happening around this time. Yes, so Cal, he's trying to look above to see what's going on. So we see another child who is left alone, abandoned on their own, crying. It's a little girl this time. And Cal sees her hiding in this little alcove, like this little area. I wrote in my notes that once again, he gives like a little bit of a nuanced performance.
Yeah, he does.
Where, you know, he, a few different emotions cross his face. You know what I mean?
And as someone who didn't remember what happened in that situation, you could read it as, whoa, like, is he thinking about the girl? And like, there's a little child here, like she needs to be saved. And there are some moments in the previous scenes that we just talked about where it is a little equivocal. Like, you're not sure, it's ambiguous what's happening with Cal maybe. But mm-hmm. here it's like, it starts like that. And then we'll see in a few minutes how it becomes very unequivocal what his intentions were.
That's pretty much what I wrote in my notes. I said, you think he might be having this moment in this thought process of maybe putting this child ahead of himself,
yeah,
or like doing something to help.
And here the nuance is, I think, written into the script and maybe the direction, whereas like in the past, I think it was just a Billy Zane choice maybe, or maybe Cameron in the moment. The outcome of the situation is no longer ambiguous once it concludes.
Right.
So whereas in the past, it's like he has a little freedom of audience interpretation and it's not a right or wrong answer, I don't think. Whereas here, there's a for sure right answer eventually why he's looking at this girl in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was saying, like, in the screenplay, it doesn't really say anything. It just says, like, Cal sees a girl, he scoops her up and runs. Like, there's, like, nothing to really, like, indicate, but...
But what about when he looks at her the first time?
No, that's it. It's just, like, Cal sees a girl. Like, that's it.
So then what I'm guessing is the situation was just going to be he sees her, realizes in that moment he could use that, and then does it. But then,
but Billy Zane played it a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe Billy Zane played it so, or James Cameron realized that if he cut it and put the look mm-hmm. a minute or two earlier and then did that, it can give the audience time to ruminate about what's happening. Yeah. So yeah, it was probably maybe then an editing / direction.
Yep.
/ Billy Zane did a good job too. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
No, yeah, that's like exactly what I wrote. I said, you think that he might be having this thought process or whatever, but since we know his character, we know that a likely outcome is that he has ulterior motives. I said, mm-hmm. but the scene cuts off before we can find out, just to keep you guessing a tiny bit. You know?
Good stuff. Yeah, no, it's great. I love when filmmakers do that stuff mm-hmm. where there's an answer, but they're not going to give it to you yet. And they let you kind of have hope, almost like test you to see if you want him to turn, like in your head, if you want him to be the good guy mm-hmm. or not. Yeah.
Yep.
It's cool. That's great. It's good stuff.
So we get like a quick flash of a shot to Jack and Rose, who are still inside the ship, and they're quickly making their way up this like back stairwell or wherever it was. And I love the way when we cut to it, we just get a line from Jack that he just says, keep going up. And I was like, obviously, Jack.
Keep going up, Rose.
They just needed like a little bit of dialogue there, I guess.
Because
if they just some cut filler. To them running, it's a little bit weird, empty. But I also said that the sound design is so good there that might have been enough. You know, you hear all the groaning mm-hmm. and the creaking and their heavy breathing. You know, they're panicking. So like that might have been enough. But of course, we got to throw Jack in there just stating the obvious again.
This had to have won for sound, right?
It must have.
As far as sound editing or mixing or whatever the category was back then.
Yeah. Best achievement in sound effects.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yes, but this is a good little quick cut back to Jack and Rose to show that they're still in there. They're still trying to get out. And you really feel... Because that's interesting. For the two scenes we're going to be talking about, that's our only shot of Jack and Rose, I think, over the course of...
Yeah. And then when they talk to...
Andrews, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very brief moments, though, with Jack and Rose here.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a good cutback. It, you know, makes everything feel loud and ominous again, and you feel their desperation. Then it cuts to Murdoch, Officer Murdoch, on deck, and he's threatening passengers, including Tommy and Fabrizio. And he's shouting that he'll shoot any man who tries to get past him, get back. James Cameron said around this moment on the audio commentary...
This shows the action around the around Collapsible A. Now, there was a bit of a riot there, and some shots were fired, and it was stated by a couple of independent witnesses that one or two individuals were shot at that time by an officer. And since this area was under the charge of First Officer Murdoch, I just made it Murdoch. But, you know, that was, I guess, a little insensitive to his relatives, some of whom are still alive. And, you know, it may not have been Murdoch. It may have been another officer or a purser or even a steward, all of whom had these kind of dark uniforms. You know, I think that I was just trying to collapse together different characters into one guy. I still think Murdoch was a real hero of the night and of the sinking. And whether he killed himself or not is unknown as a matter of historical record. Certainly he would have felt a great sense of responsibility for events because he was on watch when the ship hit the iceberg, and he certainly tried harder than almost anybody else on the ship to save lives subsequently. So that made sense to me as an emotional, psychological dynamic.
Yeah. So that's a lot. That's a lot. Large clip there. You know, so as he said, as we've said before, that this, how Murdoch was portrayed in this movie, has been a bit of a controversial topic. I can understand the way he said he was kind of almost trying to make Murdoch like a composite character of a couple different people, but since he was a real life character, I think in later years he has stated that, you know, maybe he should have just made him be, like, if he wanted to include an officer committing suicide or shooting passengers, that it should have just been a generic officer, just someone else, like a no-name person. However, as I was doing my research for this episode, I've seen a lot of people say, you know, there's no evidence that Murdoch killed himself. There's no evidence of anything. And then there are other people who say, no, yes, there was. There was testimony. And so I looked into it more than I ever have in the past for this. And I was very surprised to see that pretty much, like, I found a whole compilation of sources where they just compiled all the different times that this had been mentioned in different Titanic books that have been released. Apparently, over the years, like, pretty much soon after the sinking, stories had started to be shared by passengers and survivors, and rumors started forming, and then stories became legend, and they went on. And there was a frequent story about an officer who either shot people or an officer who killed himself. And then for some reason, Murdoch's name became closely associated with that story of being possibly that officer who killed himself. That's just kind of what has happened. I've heard other people speculate that it might have been Officer Wilde. It's pretty much them two, I guess, who have been associated with this story over the years. So I guess Cameron heard that and was like, okay, you know, I guess I'll go down the road of making this is going to happen to Murdoch. But since there is no concrete evidence that this happened, that's why I guess it got a little bit dicey for people. But in addition, as well, to having the whole bribe situation on top of it, which we also didn't talk about, which happens here before he kills himself, of course.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was all this hustle and bustle, and a man tried to jump over, and Murdoch shot him, and then because of that, another man fell forward and pushed Tommy, and then that's why Tommy got shot, just, you know, in the heat of the moment, Murdoch shot him. and he immediately regrets it, obviously, you can see. And in my notes, I said that it's kind of shocking because we saw that Officer Lightoller earlier in the movie, his threats were empty, just like his gun. He had no bullets in his gun either, you know what I mean? He was just kind of making this threat to people to get them to listen. And so we'd already seen this sort of thing play out, and you kind of think like, oh, he's probably not gonna kill passengers, but he does. And so it's a little bit shocking. Yeah, that shot, that above shot of like the blood running down the deck as well, was that always stood out to me as particularly haunting a little bit. And obviously Murdoch is looking at this. Again, we're talking about the character here though in the movie. Yeah, and to me, I just always thought of it as he's looking at the fact that he just took two lives. Obviously, this is not something he wanted to do. It's just something that happened because everything going on right now is crazy. And it's just something that I think the character just couldn't live with. And he felt like he had a duty to protect these people. And here he was taking two of their lives. And I think there was just like an overwhelming sense of guilt in that moment where, like, you know, my other thing was that he probably knew he was gonna die. Like, I think we had talked about that before, which is like, why would he even take the bribe anyway? Like, if that was the case, because he's probably gonna die, so whatever. So why wouldn't he have just maybe allowed himself to die by drowning, or, you know, go out naturally, so to speak? But then I thought to myself, well, what if by chance he did survive? Somehow, he probably wouldn't have been able to live with himself if that's the way this character was, you know, in the movie, how he's written, you know, I don't know. So that was just some stuff I had thought about. But personally, you know, people think that he was portrayed poorly, but I have always thought that Murdoch was a very sympathetic character. I never thought of this as being cowardly of him, or, you know, I always felt extremely deeply sorry for him in that moment. It was never, you know what I mean? So like, even like in comparison to what may or may not have actually happened in real life, I can understand why some people might think that it's a poor portrayal if he did not kill himself and he really was helping people. I get that. But just as it stands as like a character in the movie to make this decision in this type of moment, I sympathize.
My take on it is there are a couple things. So like, first, if you have a character who kills himself in the movie, it can't just be a random person. Just from a storytelling perspective, it just usually won't do anything to the audience. You have to have some sort of investment in that character. So it has to be someone with a name, someone who has done something already. Like, also it has to be someone who you've seen has a gun already. Again, like I've talked about the
check. You can't just pull one out. Yeah.
Something like suicide is like, that is that's a trigger. Yeah. Like, right. Cause unfortunately most of us know at least somebody who has done that. Mm-hmm. And it is like, when I watched it, I remembered that when I saw it, but my reaction to it was, it didn't feel natural to the character to me.
Really?
Like, it felt like if he is a hero, why would he kill himself? Like, why wouldn't he use his job to continue to help people? And so, like, if I am a family member, maybe I would have gotten upset about that. And maybe I would have said he helped people. Like, and if you are a family member who happens to see suicide as cowardly, then you're going to have a very emotional reaction to that. Also, it had to be, as far as him killing Tommy had to be a character, I think, that we knew. Mm-hmm. And I think the person who killed him, I think it doesn't have to be, but it creates more of a response from the audience to have it be somebody like Murdoch who kills him, who's somebody who we've seen have conversations, seen do heroic things, like throw the money back in at Cal's face or like help people onto lifeboats. It has to be someone like that to create like a conflict for the audience, some sort of emotional response.
Right.
If it's a villainized character, it's like, okay, like throw it away, right? Like, if it's somebody who we already don't like, okay, we already don't like other people in this movie, but it's someone who we kind of do already like. Mm-hmm. I think it's more effective to have it be someone like Murdoch to kill these people. People make historical movies all the time, and people make movies about real people who do things that aren't necessarily what happened in real life. The reality is, this is Titanic. It was the biggest movie of all time. So it got put up on a different pedestal than, say, a random movie that just, mm-hmm. you know, gets forgotten about, gets nominated for something, and it gets forgotten about in a couple years.
Right.
So I think that also adds to the fuel.
Yeah. Adds insult to injury there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like every, you know, for the news for like weeks. So, oh, Titanic again. It was like more and more people are seeing my ancestor mm-hmm. doing this thing that, like, I know it, they think they know didn't happen or whatever, or they're not sure happened. So, yeah, I don't know.
So there are two other commentary clips in relation to this moment. We have the historians, and then we have Murdoch's actor as well. I was kind of glad that I decided to check the cast and crew commentary for this one, because I haven't necessarily done that every time. But I decided to check it out, and they had him comment on it. So this is what the historians had to say.
And this, again, you know, is a very controversial scene. Of course, Murdoch redeems himself by throwing back the money, but, you know, even accidentally shooting a passenger at this point.
Yeah.
Just, it's been, you know, gotten a lot of bad publicity and taken a lot of heat, you know, just for this scene right here.
Presumably, I guess, partially because he's shown so out of control. He's just so...
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all things. You know, the fact that, you know, he's, you know, brandishing this gun and, you know, lets it go so easily, you know, that he fires.
Yeah.
And then now, of course, at this point, you know, he commits suicide. And,
well,
I don't believe he committed suicide. I've never believed that. But, you know, I have always defended Jim's right to put it in the movie only because I can't prove that it didn't
exactly.
happen.
There's nobody to prove or say that didn't happen. He just vanished during the night. He was gone.
That was it. They never found his body.
So they pretty much reiterated a little bit.
Yeah. Wait, which one was... One of those was the actor who played Murdoch?
No. Those were the two historians.
Oh, that wasn't that one. Oh, got it. Okay. I was like, he doesn't have... I wasn't sure. Okay, sorry.
But yeah, it's interesting the way, you know, they said that Murdoch redeems himself by throwing the money back at Cal. Because, you know, there is still a lot of debate as well about whether or not he actually accepted the bribe, or if Cal just put the money in his pocket and he just didn't even care. He just didn't... It was, you know. And so... He says that line, your money can't save you any more than it can save me, and throws it back. And I wrote in my notes, I said, of course, Cal looks shocked because money solves everything to him. There's no way this can be happening, you know, but it's such a good line, like you mentioned. And in my notes, I had said, it's a great line and honestly a big message of the film, too.
Yeah. It really encapsulates the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I said, as many people who survived thanks to being first class, there were still plenty of passengers, or plenty of wealthy passengers, who lost their lives. In the end, there was no difference. Everyone suffered the same fate, regardless of class or social status. So yeah, that's kind of just a big, a big, kind of like a mic drop moment there for Murdoch's character. But yes, there is another clip from Ewan Stewart, who played Murdoch. He had this to say about it.
I didn't really understand talk about dishonor or cowardice or anything like that. Taking the bribe as the last thing on Murdoch's mind. And this guy had kept these boats going, getting people to safety for a good while, you know, done a good job. And I didn't think the suicide was a terrible thing to do. I'm not sure that coming from a seafaring background, maybe he would just have drowned. Maybe that was the honorable way for a sailor to go. I don't know. None of us know. There's clearly been eyewitness accounts that somebody shot themselves. But then, in the heat of the moment, the extreme heat of the moment, who knows? Some people thought it was William Murdoch, but then memory is bound to play incredible tricks at a time like that, isn't it?
It was kind of nice to hear from him, you know, the way he himself said that the bribe was the last thing on Murdoch's mind. At least we know that that's how he was playing it.
No, yeah, I mean, yeah, he's got a good point. Yeah, like, more of just what I was saying. Like, personally, I didn't think that it made a ton of sense. Like, especially if, like, you talk about someone as a hero does something that's really difficult, who overcomes something and makes the right choice in something in a situation that's really difficult. And in that choice, the difficult decision would have been to live with what he did mm-hmm. and to continue to help people. And so
I know, but yeah, it's interesting how he did wonder that, like, maybe just to go down with the ship would be the honorable way for a sailor mm-hmm. to go out. You know, he doesn't know, it's kind of what we said, but I do think it's, they make a point to show Murdoch look over at that one crewman who's like moving the rope or whatever, and the guy's just kind of looking at him after he had shot the two passengers. Yeah. Murdoch sees that, and then he makes the decision. Like, and of course, like, he salutes before he kills himself too. Like, I feel like there was still a lot of, you got that he did have a sense of duty and pride for his job and his work, but just felt like he fell so short of what he was supposed to do in that moment, I guess. I don't know. I think I also had a thought, again, this was at like midnight. I had a thought where, you know, maybe he felt like since he was responsible for taking these two people's lives in this way, that he should also go out in that way. I don't know.
That's what I was thinking, that was why he did it, or what he was thinking. But yeah. Suicide in movies is such a strange thing, because a lot of times it's put into a movie. A lot of times it doesn't make sense to a character more so than it makes than like a filmmaker wants to create a response from the audience. And like, it doesn't always line up, and maybe that was the case for me with this one. But yeah, interesting. It definitely creates a response
for sure. Yeah, I think there's like a note in the screenplay about at least just the "your money can't save you" line. Cameron said, "I rewrote the scene because I wanted to make it clearer that Murdoch saw his own situation as hopeless. He's accepting full responsibility for the chaos around him. Murdoch was an honorable man who felt the burden of responsibility for the deaths which were to come." Kind of more of the same as what we had said. Except there was a little, like, in the screenplay to describe, you know, the scene in between lines, there was a bit where it said that the money was supposed to float out of his pocket as he landed in the water.
Oh, my
goodness. I know. I said, that seems like a poor decision. That's what I wrote in my notes. I said, that seems like a poor decision. Imagining that is just not sitting right with me.
It's so powerful to just watch all this money just hit and just go, like, kind of flying everywhere. Especially knowing what's going to happen, and it doesn't matter. Like, so millions of dollars are getting lost anyway. For me, that was the powerful moment, was just,
yes.
In any other movie, it's like, oh no, all that money, he's just like throwing it. But it's like, no, you know, as an audience, like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, this one, you're rooting for the money to get thrown away. Like, yeah,
it doesn't matter too. Cause it's like the fate of the ship. It's like, you know, it was just such a effective bit.
Because I also just realized that because he obviously, like I said, like, he rewrote the scene to make that clear, so that, like, you know, he throws the money back at Cal. Because if it was as written and he dies and he falls into the water and the money comes out of his pockets, that would have been so slimy. That would have given him a way more slimy end.
Like, it would have been silly. It would have probably evoked a laugh or something.
Yeah, but then, you know what I mean, though? But it's also just kind of like, what would that image really be saying? Here's the money that he accepted for the bribe, but what good is it now? Like, it's floating out of his pocket. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, no.
Like, if that had happened with the money, it would have, like, detracted from this moment of him killing himself too. It would have been, like, more about the money than it would have been about him.
Exactly.
Whereas, like, the money is a separate issue. That's more of, like, about the idea, the theme of the, like, the motif of the movie and Cal and how he thinks about life versus the money. To me, him accepting the bribe was a means to an end, which is him throwing it back into his face.
Right.
So, like, it floating out of his pocket would have been so silly.
Yes. I was just imagining it in my head. I was like, no, absolutely not. But yes, so Cal witnesses this. So he just witnessed three men die and get shot.
Yeah.
And he runs away. And he's still thinking of himself. And I said the emotions on his face just kind of look like anger and annoyance in that moment. I don't know.
Like, yeah, like, this just wasted my time.
Mm-hmm. Terrible.
Yeah. it's crazy too, because it's like, you think, oh, those people just, they saw that and they, you have to move on from that. Mm-hmm. You have to act fast.
I mean, of course, yeah, but just.
But in Cal's sense, it's different. Yeah. Like, we're supposed to think that he doesn't even have an emotional response to this. But it's like interesting, because later on, it's going to happen even more. Like, people are going to die fast, like plummeting or drowning.
So that's the end of the scene. Yes, that is all I have for that. It's a relatively short scene, but I knew there was probably enough to discuss about it to have it be at least one episode's worth. Yeah, so thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on all of the socials, because just a reminder that we do make little announcements on there. You know, when we took an extra week off because of Ocean Gate, like, I had made sure to let you guys know about that over there. We had some scheduling conflicts over the last 2 weeks where we couldn't record, so there was no new episode this past week, so I let you guys know that as well. But I also told you that we were recording today. You know, just little things like that so that you can keep up with what's going on. So be sure to follow on all the socials. All the links will be in the description. Send us an email, titanicscenebyscene@gmail.com. Send us a voicemail via the link at the bottom of the description, and all of that good stuff. And we will see you in the next scene.